Hi, hello, how are you? Welcome back to Something About, a podcast where we're currently going over it's the last episode of the season of Only Murders in the Building. All episodes of all three seasons are available on Hulu, hashtag not sponsored. And spoiler warning, and I'm going to just say it now, I guessed it right at the end of the last episode, and I'm pretty sure I guessed how it would be done too. Like, she would take it and then he would take it, and I guessed it. I'm proud of myself, but I'm also really sad now. And I also was right yet again that they had announced season four. We will be getting a season four. I'm gonna say late 2024, maybe early 2025. I don't know if they have anything written or had anything written. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a bit of both. But yeah, I was correct with my guessing and all that, and I'm very proud of myself. And now we have a new murder to figure out. But let's just dive right in. I'm going to apologize now because I use this color-changing gel pen. And at some point, it goes yellow, and it's really hard to see. So if I stumble, what's new? Because usually I stumble anyway. But if I'm extra terrible, I apologize. So I will try and do my best to read it exactly how I wrote it. But let's dive right in. We are on episode 10, called Opening Night. It starts off with Donna. People always like to ask me, what is it that a producer does? And I like to reply, produce. We see Donna sitting in what looks like the empty theater, the Gooseberry. And she continues, and that doesn't mean I just pay for it. Although I do. I'm the one who gives birth to it all. It's what I've always wanted to do. It's what I've always done. We now see a younger Donna, and it looks like it's the 80s based off of her hair and, like, her clothes. And also the fact she's talking onto a little literal brick cell phone. And she's in a hospital. She's about to give birth. She's talking to someone on the phone and telling them how they need to write a song. And she would like it written like Andrew Lloyd Webber, or she'll go elsewhere. And then she tells them, you know, she'll call Andy fucking Webber. And the person on the other end of the phone is named Carl. I don't know if that's any significance, but she was talking to a Carl on the end of the phone. A doctor like interrupts her and tells her to push, so she hangs up. And little baby Cliff was born. She continues, I've won 9 Tonys. I've given birth to 34 Broadway shows. If someone asks me what my favorite thing I've ever made, it's Mamma Mia. Hands down. Changed the trajectory of my whole career. That's a joke. Producers can be funny, and people don't really think that. I've gotten to the yellow parts of my notes, so it's slightly hard to read. She is cradling little Cliff, and she's telling him she'll always protect him. And, you know, that's what she's going to do for the rest of his life. She calls Carl back and she tells him the song should be called The Rest of Your Life. And it should be about a parent imagining their life with their child. And she continues to narrate. The thing no one ever tells you when you first start is how, I should have changed the color of the pen. I'm so sorry. The first thing no one tells you when you first start is how rewarding it can be. And we now see Cliff and Donna, like, in the theater, and she's grabbing his hand, almost, like, reassuring him with his decision. She continues, or how dangerous. We're now in Charles's apartment. Loretta is also there, and she's trying to figure out how to get Donna to confess to them. And Loretta is just excited to be there. She's been invited to, like, the inner sanctum, as she said. And Charles compares it to the Paul McCartney documentary and how he was writing the song Get Back. And Mabel makes a joke saying, like, yeah, that's why they call us the Rolling Stones of true crime. And she made a very similar joke in season one about the police. And she compares it to, like, U2. And she's kidding. She knows, you know, it's from the Beatles. And then Loretta thanks them for stopping her from just, like, ruining her whole life and pleading guilty for Ben's murder. And, you know, Mabel understands why she did it. She was doing it to protect Dickie. And Loretta also thanks them for bailing her out. Charles is the one that actually paid. But Oliver says, you know, well, they didn't take Amex, so I helped you find your visa. And then Oliver starts, like, the lovey-dovey talk with Loretta while he's, like, holding her hand and holding her closely and, like, kissing her in between every little phrase he says. And Mabel is grossed out by it. And Charles is like, oh, you don't do that with Tobert? And she's like, no, I don't. And Loretta then looks at her and goes, have you and Tobert, you know? And Mabel is kind of like, yeah. And they fist bump over it. And then she also asks them, like, are you sure it's Donna? Like, are you sure she's the one? And Charles goes on to say how she got her hand. Like, how did she get her hand on the review? And she saw that it was a pan. It was a massacre. And he keeps making comparisons. And Oliver tells him to stop. He's already had 6 heart attacks during all of this. Like, I don't need one more. And, you know, we need to move past the shitty review and, you know, like, get to what they need to know. And Mabel goes on to say Donna won't let her son's first show be a bomb. She wants it to be successful. So, like, obviously, she had to do it. And they go on trying to, like, figure out the motive. And they... I'm trying to figure... They... Hi, hello, how are you? Welcome back to Something About, a podcast where we are covering the current season of Only Murders in the Building. We're on episode 10, the final episode of season 3. All the episodes from season 1, 2, and 3 are on Hulu. Hashtag not sponsored. So if you haven't watched it, spoiler alert, or if you don't really care and are just listening to listen, I love that. And you might be a little confused, but if you've listened to every other episode, you might have a slight understanding of what is going on. So it might not be that hard necessarily to keep up. Maybe, maybe not. I do think my recaps are pretty good. I'm sure there are better. I just hit the main parts, and that's really all that matters. So episode 10, titled Opening Night. Oh, and before we even get into it, I was right. I guessed it right. I kind of guessed who did it, how they did it. And I also was correct in the fact that they were going to announce a fourth season. When are we going to get this fourth season? I don't fully know, because the writer's strike has just ended. I wouldn't be surprised if they have part of it written. So I'm thinking late 2024, maybe early 2025. I don't know. But let's dive right in. Let's get to it. I thought it was a good episode. I've heard mixed reviews online. I thought it was good. But episode 10, opening night. We hear Donna. People always like to ask me, what is it that a producer does? And I like to reply, produce. We see Donna sitting in the empty theater of the Gooseberry. And that doesn't mean I just pay for it, though I do. I'm the one who gives birth to it. And it's what I've always done and wanted to do. We see a younger Donna, and it looks like the 80s, one because of her hair. We see a younger Donna, and she is in the hospital. She is talking on her big brick 80s phone. That's one way you can tell it's the 80s, also based off of her hair and like her outfit. And she's on the phone, and she's talking to someone about how they need to write a song like Andrew Lloyd Webber, or she'll go elsewhere. And by elsewhere, she'll just call Andy fucking Webber. And the person she's talking to is Carl. I thought that was going to mean something. Really doesn't. The doctor interrupts her phone call and just tells her she needs to push. And she does like one big push, and little baby Cliff is born, and just so cute. I want to squeeze him so tight. And she continues to say, I've won 9 Tonys. I've given birth to 34 Broadway shows. But if someone asked me what my favorite thing I've ever made is, Mamma Mia, hands down, changed the trajectory of my whole career. That's a joke. Producers can be funny. People don't realize that. She's cradling baby Cliff, and she says to him that she will protect him the rest of his life. She then realizes she needs to call Carl back and tells him the song should be called The Rest of Your Life. And it should be about a parent imagining life with their child. And she continues to say, the thing no one tells you when you first start is how rewarding it can be. And now we see Cliff and Donna in the theater, and she's grabbing his hand, almost reassuring him, like, you know, you've done it, you've made the right choice. I'm assuming about the play. And then she says, or how dangerous. And I'm assuming that means like having a child, you know, how amazing it's going to be, but also just how dangerous because of what you would do for your child, as we've seen throughout this whole season. And now we are in Charles's apartment, and Loretta is also there joining them, and she's so excited. And they're trying to figure out how to get Donna to confess to them. And again, Loretta is just so excited. She feels like she's been invited to the inner sanctum. And Charles compares it to Paul McCartney writing the song Get Back in the Beatles documentary. And Mabel goes, that's why they call us the Rolling Stones of true crime. And both Charles and Oliver give her a look like, that's not what that means. That's not who he is. And she jokes and she goes, I know, it's from the Beatles. Like, it's a throwback to season one when they did it with Sting and the Police. And she thought, like, oh, part of you too. And again, she was kidding. Loretta again thanks them for stopping her, for almost pleading guilty for Ben's murder. And Mabel, you know, looks at her and is like, we understand why you did it. You did it to protect Dickie. She also thanks them for bailing her out. And Charles is like, it was no we, it was me. And Oliver mentions, well, they wouldn't take Amex, so I had to help you find your Visa card. And then Oliver takes Loretta's hands and he starts talking all lovey-dovey to Loretta and like kissing her in between, all that gross stuff. And Mabel is equally as grossed out. And Oliver's like, you don't do that with Tobert. And she's like, no, I definitely don't. And Loretta looks at Mabel and asks her, like, you know, have you two? Mm-hmm. And Mabel's like, yeah. And, you know, they fist bump and they're like, oh my God, you did it. Oh. And Loretta then asks them, are you guys sure about Donna? And Charles goes on to say, like, how she got her hand onto the review and saw that it was a pan, it was horrendous, it was a massacre. And as Charles is comparing it to all the terrible things you can possibly think of, Oliver stops him and reminds him that he's had like 6 heart attacks already while making the show and he doesn't want another one. And, you know, we need to move past the shitty review and get to what we know about the case. Mabel goes on to say Donna won't let her son's first show be a bomb due to Ben's acting. And, you know, she saw the rat poison and she put it on the cookie because she knows Ben wouldn't be able to resist the cookie because of his deep-seated eating disorder. Because if you remember, he was fasting before the show. And Oliver compares it to his love of dips and how when he was eating the red herring dip, it helped Mabel crack the case. And he's also currently eating dip. And when the rat poison didn't kill him, Donna took advantage of the broken open elevator and pushed him down the shaft. And Charles goes on to say that, you know, it was a drastic step for her. And Loretta cuts in and says, you know, she was sick, or she, you know, she was sick and she must be sick because on the day that Loretta had admitted to being the one killing Ben, if you remember, she ran into Donna in the bathroom and Donna was puking. So her time is limited here. So she's going to do anything for her child. And Loretta understands that. And now they need to get the confession on tape. And Oliver, you know, looks at Loretta and tells her, you know, it's what we do. Mabel has a plan. She's going to go over it. She's going to start with a bouquet of flowers. And she wrote down their lines and a little script on cards. And she's handing it out to Oliver and Charles. And Charles wants to rearrange some of the lines and rewrite them because he thinks he should have certain ones versus Oliver. And that sets them off in bickering, saying, oh, you think you're the better actor? Or you think you could say that better? And as they're bickering, Loretta looks to Mabel and says, you know, is it always like this? And Mabel looks at Loretta and is like, yeah, this means that we're on fire. It's a good thing. And while the two are still bickering, she asks Donna, when are you going to tell Dickie? And Loretta says, after opening night. And again, they're still bickering and Charles mentions to Oliver how he likes to milk things. And so then that sets Oliver off on like a milk tirade. And then he looks inward and goes, yeah, you're right. You're right. I do like to milk things. And as they're doing it, Loretta walks over to her bag and pulls out a hanky. And not just any hanky. It's Ben's hanky. The one that, if you remember, Uma had taken off of Ben's dead body and then sold on eBay. And she sold it on eBay to Dickie. And then Dickie gave it to Loretta. And it's got Ben's blood on it. And as she's handing it over and they're looking at her excited and shocked, she asks, did I do good? She definitely did good. We then have the opening credits, and I'm going to miss the song. I love the opening song. It's just, it's so good. We are now at the Gooseberry backstage. Howard is sweeping, and as he is sweeping, he is very nervously saying, help us, Gideon, help us, Gideon. And Kimber overhears him outside her dressing room, and she asks him, like, what he's doing, and he kind of nervously yells over his shoulder, like, we need all the help we can get, and he continues to do it, and Kimber is just so excited, and she's like, oh my god, it's opening night, goes back into her dressing room. We see Jonathan taking his lead actor cocktail, the same one that Ben was prescribed, and Mabel is starting off their plan. She's in like a beautiful silvery gold long sleeve kind of cocktail dress with a Peter Pan collar. Her hair's down looking. It just, Selena looks so good. She's delivering flowers to Donna with a note. And the note says, the new review is in KT's office. And she looks at that and she looks at Cliff and, you know, she's going to be right back. And Cliff looks at Mabel and also loves her dress. Like, he is in awe of it. And before Donna leaves, you know, she gives Cliff a kiss on the lips and one on his heart. And before she does it, she takes like a napkin and like blots her lipstick, probably as to not leave any behind on him. And then she heads back to the office where she is confronted by Charles, Mabel, and Oliver. I love that the team is back together. They mention the review, the first one, and how it was the worst review that her son could possibly get. And that's when she got the cookie idea, because she saw the rat poisoning. She saw the cookie. She knew. Donna knows that they know. And she openly admits it. And she looks around and asks, like, where's the mic hidden? Because she knows they have a podcast. And Tobert comes out of the corner and he's dressed like a coat rack. And, you know, they asked him, did you get it? And he's like, I think I got it. And Donna wanted enough of the rat poisoning to knock Ben on his ass. And she wasn't sure the exact amount that it was going to take. And she says, how many rats is one Ben Glenroy? That's a solid question. And she knew she was sitting on a hit musical through Oliver. So if she could just take Ben out, Oliver would get there. And, you know, they kind of figure out she didn't push him, maybe. And they show Donna the hanky. And the lipstick stain on it matches the lipstick that's on Donna. Donna then admits to, yes, I also pushed him. And, you know, Ben would ruin the show. Tober got it. He's listened back. He's got it. And she asks just one thing. She wants to see her son's first show before they call the police. She's not a flight risk. She's got stage 4 lung cancer. So she's not going to run. And she also has No More Famous Actors to Kill. And as she says that, she looks at Charles and she goes, "No offense." And Charles looks at her and goes, "All taken." Because, like, he was on Brazos for what, like 7 seasons? And, you know, she looks at Oliver and reminds him, you know, "I gave you a shot when no one else would." Oliver kind of nods in agreement and allows her, you know, like, "Yes, you can stay and watch, but will you readmit your guilt, you know, to make sure we got it recorded?" Howard then runs into the office and he tells them that Jonathan cannot go on. The actor cocktail has got to him, so he's like loopy and slurring his words, kind of giggly. And they need someone to replace Jonathan. And as Howard is saying this, he's making a speech kind of implying he should be the one to, like, go on stage. And as they're all looking around a little worried, we now see Matthew Broderick, Uma, and Jerry, the original director of the play, all entering the theater. They're all sitting down, and the curtains go up, and the show begins. And who has taken Jonathan's spot? Oliver. And he starts to sing the song, Creature of the Night. I will not be singing it, but just to let you know, it's available on Apple Music. It's available on Spotify. They actually recorded the whole performance, so you can watch it also on YouTube. I did that. I didn't buy the whole album. I bought Pickwick Triplets. I did buy The Nanny's Lullaby, and then I bought Creature of the Night as well. And then they have two different versions of, what's the name of the song? For the Sake of the Child, they have Oliver's version, and then they have Ben's version, both full, literally the exact same song. One is just Martin Short, and one is Paul Rudd, and they're great. I love them. Worth every penny. I'm singing a hybrid of all the songs mixed together of just like literally the choruses that I know. And we see Uma and she says that Oliver is a quadruple threat. He can't sing, he can't act, dance, or even direct. And Matthew looks at her and goes, "I like you." He likes the bitterness Uma has, and he's probably a little bit bitter that he was fired and he was replaced by Charles. Mabel is watching from the side stage, and she's now headed downstairs to where all the dressing rooms are. And Tobert comes out, and he gives her the recording of the confession. It's all there. And he goes on to say that, like, you know, they don't talk about feelings, and if he really had feelings for her, he would let her know that he's been offered a job to film this little, like, indie project out in L.A. And, like, maybe she'd like to go out and, like, join him. But, like, you know, we don't talk about our feelings or, like, where we're at. But, like, if you want to come, maybe, like, think about it. And Mabel, like, smiles and kind of laughs at it all because they don't talk about their feelings. And She agrees to think about it and they kiss. And I really like them together. I like Mabel and Tobert together. They're equally as snarky to each other. They're a good fit. And, you know, Oliver is just excited. He's excited to be on the stage. And Dickie is watching Loretta from the side as well perform the lullaby. And he's looking at her as she's performing it. And he kind of just, he has a feeling. Like he almost knows. And when she's all done performing and she leaves the stage, she goes to tell Dickie. And she doesn't need to tell Dickie because he knows. And he tells her, I've felt it, you know, since I saw you at the read-through. There was just something and I knew. And she tells him, you know, I admitted to killing Ben because I would do anything for you because I kind of thought you did it. But, like, you know, you're my child and I would do anything for you. And Mabel overhears it through a curtain on the other side. And you see her smile. You know, she's really happy. And, you know, Donna and Cliff are talking off in the audience. And she's watching them talk and sees kind of the concern on Cliff's face. So she is suspect. And, you know, she sees them get up and, well, she sees Cliff get up and kind of storm away from his mother. So Mabel follows him down again to where all the dressing rooms are, and she can't find him. And she asks Jonathan, who we see is clearly a little messed up, and asks him, you know, where'd he go? And he points up to like the rafters where Jerry was living. And we now see Charles perform a bit of his song. And she finds Cliff in the rafters. And he goes on to say, you know, he used to watch his mom's shows from there when he was younger. And he just loved it. And Mabel goes on to tell Cliff, you know, your mom's confessed, but it wasn't all her. And it flashes back. And as Mabel is saying, you know, one on the lips and one on the heart, you know, she did it the night of the original opening night, where she puckered onto the handkerchief and tucked it into his pocket, very similar how she did earlier. And that's how the lipstick got on the hanky. And Cliff admits, yeah, I had her handkerchief. And it flashes back to right before Ben's fall down the elevator shaft. He, you know, talks to Ben and is like, oh, you were on the phone for like this last half hour. What, you know, who were you talking to? What was that? And Ben tells Cliff, you know, like, oh, that was a hospital calling. They got my labs back. He said there was rat poison. And he mentions all the other meds in, like, again, the leading actor cocktail he takes. And it was the little microdose of Viagra that probably, you know, saved his life. And then he's just trying to deduce how he possibly ate rat poisoning. He had been fasting right before the play. And then it hits him, the cookie Donna gave him. And he recalls the conversation he had as Donna was leading him to his fitting room to, you know, just calm down, you know, go relax in your fitting room, be nice to Ben. She handed him the cookie, knowing he was going to eat it. Cliff goes on to say, you know, she was protecting me. And then he kind of spirals and is like, she thought this place sucked. And, you know, you can go and call the cops. Or Ben says he was going to go and call the cops on Cliff's mother because she poisoned him, attempted murder. And what does it is Ben calls Cliff boy, and Cliff is like, no, I am Cliff. I am my own person. And, you know, he admits how he feels about all of this, and he calls Ben a phony, and Ben keeps calling Cliff boy, and he threatens. And while this is all being recalled, Cliff threatens to throw himself down like a door in the rafters, where you'd probably drop something down onto stage to make it look like something's fallen from the sky. He threatens to throw himself down onto the stage. And, you know, Mabel understands what is happening. And he says it was all an accident. And he's looking down onto the stage. And as he looks down onto the stage, he sees what is Ben's character from the play on a boulder. But rather than seeing Oliver as that character, he sees Ben. And Cliff says he's not going to let his mother take the fall. And while this is all happening, Loretta is performing Sake of the Child. And it's cutting back and forth between Ben playing the role and Oliver playing the role, and that's why there are both versions available, and they're amazing. You should get them. Cliff again threatens to jump, and Mabel is just trying to stop him, and she is yelling for help. And even though Charles's character is dead on stage, Charles hears her, gets up to help, and Jerry is watching and going, is someone up in my rafters? And Uma also says, didn't the constable like die 3 scenes ago? Like, why is he getting up? And Matthew Broderick goes, he's running how a Nova Scotia constable would run. Because remember, Matthew Broderick studies up on this stuff. And we now hear who, I know this is all what we were wondering, who killed the mother in Death Rattle Dazzle. The detective, he killed the mother, and he is also the father of the triplets. And again, we're seeing both Oliver and Ben in that role. Charles is up there trying to help, and it flashes back to Ben and Cliff. And, you know, Ben is telling Cliff, you know, have fun kissing mommy between bars. And now we see Cliff grabbing Ben and pushing Ben in the elevator shaft. And you see the look on Cliff's face change as he watches Ben fall. It goes from almost anger and sadness to kind of, it's very conniving almost. He's got like a tiny little smirk, like he is proud of what he has done. And Ben has grabbed the hanky at the same time. Oliver runs up all those stairs, and he mentions, like, damn, that's a lot of stairs, to help them stop. And Cliff is hanging, you know, out the little hole in, I don't know what you would call that, little hole in the floor, and he asks Oliver about the splash, his play, and if the mermaid were up this high, and Oliver's like, no, not quite. And he asked him if they made a splat noise, and Oliver's like, yeah, they did. And it sounded very painful. And as Cliff is still threatening to let go and to presumably fall to his death, Donna comes up and puts her hands on his hands to stop him. And the play is ongoing, and Uma says, this is the strangest fucking play she's ever seen. And Jerry looks at them and goes, my version was stranger. And Matthew Broderick is glad to not be in it. The curtain drops. Katie runs onto the stage, and she nervously yells, like, curtain call. So, like, everyone come out from wherever the heck you were. We need to all bow. Mabel joins them on stage. They all bow. The audience kind of cheers because it was a great musical. And it cuts to the police taking away both Donna and Cliff. Maxine's review is in. They've got it. She said it had her doubts, but, you know, Oliver was able to Botox, bedazzle it all back to life. And Oliver says, you know, this was the opening night of his dream, of his dreams, with a girl of his dreams. And Dickie comes up to Loretta and lets her know, you know, Grey's Anatomy, New Orleans family burn unit is interested in her still. And also she was offered the lead in Hedda Dobler. Loretta says she may not take it. She may not take either. She doesn't want to leave. And Oliver reassures her and says, you know, he likes LA in small doses. And we now cut to Taubert and Mabel. And he's asking Mabel if, you know, would you possibly join me in LA? And she agrees, you know, you're right. I do need to get unstuck, but I need to stay in LA. I she still has like some stuff she's got to figure out. And she too likes LA in small doses. So for now, they all remain in New York. And Charles suggests, like, you know, maybe we'll find a cold case. And as he says that, Saz pops up and kind of opens the door and goes, how about this one? And she has like a cold case of beer over her shoulder. And Charles is kind of shocked that, like, how'd you get in here? And she goes, like, I don't have keys to all your apartments. Obviously, she took Charles's keys at some point and had copies made. She tells Charles, I need to talk to you when you get a moment. And he's like, yeah, sure. I got to run up to my apartment and grab this bottle of Artesian wine he's had since like 68. And, you know, Charles gets a text from Joy and it says like Scott Bakula says hi. And Charles is like, ooh, she's sending out feelers. And Oliver and Mueller are like, how is that sending out feelers? Like, that almost sounds like she's trying to make you jealous, bro. We now see Charles enter his apartment, walk into the kitchen. We hear what sounds like a glass break. Mabel and Oliver looking for Charles in his apartment. We see a body fall to the ground. Turns out it's Saz. And clearly it was meant for Charles because he was in Oliver's apartment. And Saz grabs her neck. And she has blood on her hands, and she drops her hand down to her side, and she's writing something in her blood on Charles's floor. And we now have the murder for next season. Saz has been murdered, and I am devastated because I love Saz's character on this show. I have no idea who the killer will be for season 4. Obviously, this person does not like Charles. I've already seen people think maybe it's Lucy's mom, because Lucy loves Charles so much. And she's not with Charles anymore. Like, why are you hanging out with him? Some people think maybe it's someone Joy knows. Some people think maybe Jan's gotten out of prison and has done. I have no idea. I'm terrible at this. I know I guessed who did it and why they did it. But I need more than just Saz being shot through a window. And speaking of Jane, she has a podcast that's out and I listened to the whole thing. It is so good. It's produced by, I can't think of the woman's name. She played the blonde cheerleader Brittany on Glee. She produces it, and Jane narrates it. It's called The Bystanders. Ed Eastwick is in it. It's got the gentleman who plays Oscar from The Office. It's got a bunch of well-known people in it. It is so good. You should definitely go listen to it. It is available on Apple Podcasts, and I'm sure it's also available on Spotify. But it's a good murder mystery. Oh, Kristen Chenoweth is in it. It is so good. So if you want a little murder mystery podcast whilst waiting for whenever season 4 of the show is going to drop, because I think it's going to be a hot minute, probably closer towards the end of 2024, early 2025, because we have no idea how far they've gone into writing season 4. Like I said, I'm pretty sure they have plot points and they already know who has done it and why. It's now filling in the in-between with dialogue for a solid 10 episodes, make it make sense. And if we don't know if it's the last season, and if it is going to be the last season, they're going to want to put cute little bow ties and wrap up storylines so we're not completely left at a cliffhanger. I'm going to say it again. I really want Hulu and Steve Martin and Jonathan Hoffman to come together and write out these podcasts that Cinda Canning has come out with and release them so we as fans can listen to them in the meantime, because we would, and they could either drop them all at once, you know, release them every Tuesday like they've been releasing the show. I just think they'd be so good, and it would just be great to hear the same podcast that brought our trio together in season one, because it would be so good. Tina Fey's got a great voice. But that's all. I am so sad that the season is over. I don't know what I'm going to do from here on out. I will think of subjects maybe to cover. I'll put a box up on Instagram. So if you follow on Instagram, it's something.about.podcast. I'll put up a little, you know, like question speech box thing for any topics. You know, you think I should cover TV shows, you think I should cover, and I may come up with topics and want suggestions. And if you want your opinion heard, you just have to answer the question. It's not that hard, because when I do it, if you don't hear your response, did you respond? Maybe not. But it's been a lovely, wonderful journey. I'm going to apologize for the audio. It's been a little weird. And I can't wait for next season. If you could rate, like, and review wherever it is you listen to podcasts, I will love you forever and see you all on the flip side. Bye.